We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Mully and Hall, mornings live at 5 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago's sports station.
I was so nervous that game because I knew I was coming in with Johnny. He had told me, he had prepped me the night before and said, this is how I see things playing out, and prepped me what I was doing with John. And I don't think I got a night's wink of sleep knowing I might come in. And
no, we did choreograph it the day before. We talked about it exactly. I said, yep. when John comes in, you're coming in, regardless of when that moment would occur. So everybody was on the same page in that moment. But I do remember you specifically standing in that dugout looking at me and saying, he's really, really sharp.
He looked good. He was throwing BB. I think the adrenaline rush, right? I mean, getting up in seventh game of World Series, and he was our horse that year. He had a phenomenal year, him and Kyle. You got Chappie on the backside. Yeah,
it was pretty special.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Kelly Kroll is in for Mike Mulligan today, and that was the voice of David Ross, a familiar one, and also Joe Maddon. That was on this radio station, Kelly, that last night after the post-game show.
Very cool.
It's the post-post-game show at Madden's Post. So it gets a lot of posts in there.
I like it.
But it was Ron Coomer hosting a show at Joe Maddon's new restaurant, and his special guests were Anthony Rizzo. It was nice to hear Anthony Rizzo on this radio station, and David Ross, as well as John Vincent. Everyone knows the singer John Vincent.
Of course, and 22 seconds holding that note.
Absolutely.
On
okay.
I'm not really going to get much into
okay,
that.
Okay, thank you very much. So anyway, that was fascinating radio. And I listened to the show this morning. I wasn't up as late as you. I'm older than you. I needed to get to sleep after the Cubs game. So I listened to it this morning, though, before we went on the air. And it was fascinating to hear, first of all, Ron Coomer wearing his fedora at Madden's Post, sitting in the corner, holding court, having a show. Ron knows his radio. He knows his way around a microphone. And working in David Ross, Anthony Rizzo, with Madden, who showed up. And Joe was so relaxed. And they talked about things, and John Vincent sang, and it was touching because, I mean, once they got through the baseball stories, and we'll get to that in a second, John Vincent and Ron Coomer go way back, and it goes to the point where they were, John Vincent knew Ron's grandparents and mowed the grass, and they shared the same affinity for his grandmother's dessert, and he got into that, and they talked about being at Ron's wedding. It was really good. So if you get on a chance, go to 670score.com, download the podcast, and listen to it again, because it was really something that they're going to do again this season. And if you get a chance, it's kind of Joe Maddon unplugged.
Yeah, it was story time.
It's story time.
It wasn't so much of a press conference and asking questions, and it was just four guys who you could tell all have a great relationship together to begin with, just kind of chatting it up.
And by the way, it's
fun times.
Intended for audiences, Cub fans. All right, definitely Cub fans.
Without a doubt.
A lot of Cub fans that are
But stories
in
they may or may not have heard, like you just said.
And probably nothing from last night's game was that discussed. They weren't like, what did you think of Wilson Contreras, you know, pumping his chest and things like that. It was more general. They did tell their share of 2016 World Series stories. Mm-hmm. David Ross told a story about the first time that he and Joe Maddon had a conversation on the phone when he was a free agent, and they really didn't have a history. I didn't realize that. I also didn't realize that Ron Coomer and David Ross were teammates with the Dodgers, and they were locker mates with the Dodgers. I had forgotten that if I knew it.
I remember that, hearing that, yes.
And Rossi talking about how messy Coomer's locker was. It was good stuff.
I could see that.
And And Kelly, we were talking about this before, and when you hear Joe Maddon and David Ross talk together,
It's an interesting dynamic.
Well, it is because of what we have made it in Chicago. We have sort of assumed that David Ross is the heir apparent or somebody who could be the manager in waiting. But to hear those guys, there's a genuine affection. There is no tension. There is no awkwardness. These guys really like each other, and that comes through when they talk to each other.
Sure, two guys with a lot of confidence in who they are, what they bring to the table. And right now, I think they're both very transparent with one another, and that's not something that the two even think about.
You ran into Rossi this weekend, though, too, huh?
I did, yeah. I just always...
was it a podcast?
I love it. No. It was not a podcast. Okay. Gosh, I need to get him on, though. That's I appreciate you bringing that up. No, I'm actually David Ross, you know, a big country music fan. I had a chance to get out to Lake Shake this weekend, bumped into him. Of course, his days in Atlanta.
I knew there was a reason I really liked you, Kelly Kroll.
Yeah, right?
I knew there was a reason.
We got the affinity for our country music.
We've got the country music. We got the Hoosier thing going.
Well, you know, he grew up right around where Cole Swindell and even, I know he has some sort of tie with Luke Bryan as well. Mm-hmm. And so anyway, he was there and bumped into him there. But I don't know how we got talking on the baseball, but you made me think of it when you brought up last night the show at Madden's Post is he still gets... how without the Cubs and without coming in 2016, he is not who he is today. He isn't that guy. He isn't this famous Grandpa Rossi guy. And what he said to me was, I remember I had a chance to sign with the Padres, and the Padres were even, I think, offering him more money and stuff. And he basically said he made the decision. I think I'm sure
before the 2015 season.
Yes. Yes.
Right around the time after they signed John Lester, because when they signed John Lester, then they went out and they got David Ross because they signed John Lester.
Right, and John played, I'm sure, a huge role in that decision, but ultimately he just sort of looked at me and said, can you imagine how different my life had been if I'd have gone to San Diego? And I said, well, it is San Diego. But at the same time, I got where he was coming from. He just basically was like, here's a guy that could have been pulled onto the stage the other night with two of country music's biggest guys because... He's David Ross.
He's David
and
Ross
he's the,
in
the
Chicago.
Way he went out as a champion.
And he spent
he
2 years here.
Yes. And what he meant to the history of this organization, naturally Boston as well, but and just who he, I mean, he and Anthony Rizzo are still very, very close.
And that came through as well. The relationship between Rizzo and Ross is maintained even after David Ross has left the Cubs. This is a guy that hasn't played in two seasons and still is as popular as any Cub there is.
Don't tell Emily this, but there is a picture of Rizzo with his arm around David Ross sitting in his locker. It's the only picture Rizzo has.
I think you just did tell Emily that. I think you just did.
I'm kidding. She would laugh at this. But no, it's a picture of the two of them, and you see them from behind, right? So you see their jerseys. So you see the Rizzo and the Ross, and Rizzo has his arm around Ross as though they're like walking off into the sunset
together.
He spent
2 years in Chicago, and he is a folk hero.
He is.
At Wrigley Field. So, okay, put you on the spot. David Ross's future with the Cubs. Ugh. What do you think it is? Do you think it's going to be one day as a manager? Do you think he's going to manage somewhere else? Do you think he'll end up being in the front office because that is something that he is now a special assistant? But really, what is he? He's an ESPN commentator who gets access to the Cubs. Essentially, but where is his future?
Yeah, even when he joked about when he went down and got to see Kemble, he even joked. Remember, he came out and said, first real assignment I've really had since I've been here. So I don't know that the front office is, I think he's pretty, I think he gets where he stands with that. But the managing thing, absolutely. And it would make perfect sense with the Cubs and especially the group that's there now, whenever the time comes that Joe Maddon's time here is done. But I don't think there is any rush to get to that position for David Ross. I think he is loving life the way it is right now, right?
He should.
With his family. Yeah.
Absolutely. And he is an odd link between whenever Craig Kimbrell arrives, and it could be as early as Thursday, apparently, based on what we heard yesterday. He caught Craig Kimbrell's first major league outing.
Yep.
And he was a teammate of the Cubs radio analyst, Ron Coomer, in the booth. Mm-hmm. So David Ross is the guy sort of that bridges the two.
He bridges a lot. Just been on a lot of teams, and he's come across a lot of players.
It's like MLB Kevin Bacon.
So many his favorite players. Right.
7 degrees of separation from Rossi.
And there's something that every guy I talk to says, and it's when it comes to the teammate aspect of who David Ross is, but I do know that's something when he came to the Cubs, he wanted to be better at. And so he worked really hard at it with the Cubs, but he was the guy that held others accountable, especially the young guys, but then in a way that's not too much, right? Not too deflating.
Before we get off baseball, because we have Coby White at 8:20, then Mike Florio at 8:40, what was your overall lasting impression of the White Sox? We mentioned the White Sox. They lost the game last night. Lucas Giolito was so-so. Tim Anderson was 0-for-5, had a ground ball deep in the hole, could have gone to third base, and he ended up going to first, and the Red Sox won. in walk-off fashion with an infield single. But last week when they played the Cubs at Wrigley Field, you had a much different feeling than you did while in the midst of this losing streak. What was your takeaway from the White Sox?
Yeah, and I'll go kind of big picture here instead of just pointing out, obviously, the season Giolito has had up to his last two starts or whatever. I mean, you can't take away what he's done, and that's been incredible to watch. And Tim Anderson, the way he's really kind of come into his own this season has been a fun story to watch and everything. But what I took away, and maybe that it's that I'm biased towards Rick Renteria and that I've always loved Ricky, worked with him. He was a first manager, or well, I should say first base coach, bench coach at the Padres when I was out there. But I took away thinking of things I had heard the Cubs say, and even Joe Maddon at times, what that Mets series and even the San Francisco series meant in 2015 of this team taking that next step, turning the corner, believing in themselves and the confidence. And what I'm seeing is Rick Renteria taking this young group full of talent, and they're making that next step. And I'm seeing guys believe in the product, believe in what he is selling.
The culture.
The culture.
She's
yes.
Kelly Kroll. She's in for Mike Mulligan. We're going to shift gears, talk to Bulls first-round draft pick Coby White. After the break, coming back, Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
He has a soul and a spirit, which I think is important.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Kelly Kroll in this morning for Mike Mulligan, doing a great job filling in here until 9 o'clock. And we are pleased now to bring in Coby White, and Coby joins us on the St. Charles Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram Hotline, home of the real deal. Good morning, Coby. Welcome to Chicago.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Coby, first of all, I'd like to start with complimenting you on the eloquent essay that you wrote for the Players Tribune on the loss of your father. Somebody your age, having dealt with the loss of a loved one at 17 years old a couple of years ago, and the way that you have handled that and the way that you presented yourself in the Players Tribune it's really commendable. How much have you thought about your dad the past couple days, and will you continue the tribute of wearing the pink shoes in his honor with the Bulls?
I thought about it a lot. It's been an emotional time for me and my family. There's just been a lot going on, and we're just wishing that he was here. Thinking about doing something with the shoes. I don't necessarily know if they're going to be pink, but I've definitely been thinking about doing something with the shoes to keep their memory going.
Coby, when you say that you've been thinking about him a lot, what do you think through this entire process and with your family and where you are now and what this week has meant to you and where you're headed, what would he have been most proud of?
I think just me getting drafted for sure. He's seen me work so hard my whole life and just try to get here. And, for me, I never thought this day would come, but it came. And I think he'd just be overall proud of me, and especially not only as a player, but the man that I've become. Mm-hmm. So,
Coby, you sit at the press conference yesterday. They introduce you to the Chicago media. You get a chance to get to know Jim Boylan a little bit better. John Paxson was there. What was your biggest impression of your first day as a Chicago Bull in Chicago? And how would you describe Jim Boylan?
It was great. First day was great, exciting. Got to see the practice facility and some of the city, and got some great food in me. but it was great. It was love. It was exciting. Like I always said before, I met Coach Boylan before I got drafted, and I said it was the best meeting I ever had. Coach, he's just down to earth, genuine dude. Since he wants the best for the players, but he wants to win. He's just a player that's going to tell you how it is and where you, I know, like, so that's my type of coach. And so I'm just excited to be here.
What did you eat?
We had Joe's last night.
Good choice.
That is a good choice.
Yeah.
Kobe, you'll learn. Yeah. You're going to have a lot of good choices. You big food guy? What's your genre of food? If that.
I like food, but now I kind of got to watch what I eat at this point.
Oh, so. Stop it. You've got to watch what you eat? No chance. Yeah. You're burning like 3,000 calories an hour, I'm sure.
Yeah, but you know what I'm saying? I got to be my best self.
Your best self. Be a lot more healthy. I love it. Hey, speaking of hungry, if I can make a really poor transition, this is early in the morning for me too, Kobe. I'll put it that way. This fan base, do you get a sense of how hungry Bulls fans are to see this team back at the top?
Yeah, for sure. For sure. You can tell, you can sense it through media, social media, and, you know, like I said, I'm all about winning, too, so I'm just going to come in and do whatever role my team needs me to do for us to be the best we can be, so, you know, I want to win, too, so.
Joined by Kobe White, the Bulls' first-round draft pick out of North Carolina, the point guard drafted seventh last week, Mullion Haw, Kelly Kroll in for Mike Mulligan today, and Kobe, obviously, yesterday everybody got a chuckle when you described meeting Michael Jordan for the first time and only time. And then John Paxson offered to kind of put you in touch if you needed to get in touch, as if you needed maybe somebody to help kind of bridge that gap. What do you remember about that meeting with Michael, and will you take up Pax on his offer?
The meeting with Michael was kind of, I told you, I just shook his hand, but if he can get it done, then, you know, I would love to speak to him, obviously. But I'm not pressing it. You know, it is what it is. I mean, I'm not really pressing it. I'm not,
Kobe, I'm going to be honest. I kind of had a similar experience. I worked in the NBA years ago with Grant Long. Not sure if he was our analyst, and we were playing Charlotte. Michael Jordan from a distance is walking our direction, and I looked at. I said, "G-man, you got to introduce me. You got to introduce me." And I froze, totally froze. And this is what I do for a living. All I do is talk, and I was mesmerized. His like fingers went all the way up to like midway to my arm, right? You know, as I go in for the handshake. I was just told. So certainly. Starstruck, I think, is what a lot of people feel when in the presence of MJ. But I got to know about the hair. How long you been wearing the hair like that? How much work is it? What's the products? Like, give me the whole lowdown on the hair.
I've been wearing it for, I started growing it my freshman year of high school.
Okay.
Wow.
A long time.
Yeah, but I cut it here and there. Like, before I went to school, I cut, 7 inches off. I'll cut it randomly.
7 inches is a lot. Like, I think about, I mean, you could have given that away, like, Locks for Love or something like that.
Kelly's,
I mean,
jealous. Kelly
am.
Sounds jealous, Kobe.
I am. Of the, you got a nice quiff.
Yeah. And it just grows back really fast. I don't really do much to it because I be having so much going on and I get lazy about it. So I don't really do much to it, but I use Carol's Daughter. That's about the only thing to wash it. And everything else is just kind of natural.
But imagine how fast you'd be if it were shorter. I mean, aerodynamic. Kobe, obviously, you're no stranger to competition. You played at North Carolina. You went to North Carolina knowing you'd be surrounded by fellow blue chippers. And you come into Chicago, and certainly there's a lot of expectations surrounding your being drafted number one overall or number in the first round. Chris Dunn is the holdover point guard right now. They're probably going to sign a free agent point guard. How do you view your role and what you're entering in terms of competing for playing time and the role you will play?
Right now, I don't really know my role. I just got here. But I know that I'm going to compete every day. I've been competing my whole life. And when I got to Carolina, I had to compete for a spot. So it's nothing really new to me. So I'm just going to go hard every day and be the best player I can be.
Kobe, have you heard from any of your new teammates yet? Or, like, in terms of whether it be Zach LaVine, Larry Markkanen and company, and your thoughts on getting on the floor with those guys and what that looks like?
Well, Zach LaVine, Larry Markkanen, Otto Porter, Wendell Carter all text me on nice. Draft night and just told me congratulations. I ate dinner with Denzel Valentine and Wendell Carter. That was at there last night, so it was good chopping it up there.
Oh, so they all and, got Joes, huh? You guys all lived it up.
And So, I mean, I'm excited. They're stepping on the floor, especially, you know, as a dream come true. But, you know, I'm just excited to step on the floor and get to work. Should be exciting. So,
Wendell Carter Jr. is a Duke guy. Did you guys have a past, though, growing up? Did you guys play together at AAU or in Travel League?
We played together his last year of AAU. He was a year older than me. So he played on the 17s, and I played on the 16s. But we never really played against each other or anything, but we just played for the same organization. So I kind of already know from that.
And did you grow up a Duke fan? Is that correct?
Yeah, I did. When I was little, my dad was one, so I was one. And then when college hit, you kind of got to do what's best for you.
And that turned out to be pretty good decision to make.
Did Wendell offer up anything insightful about the organization, the team you're stepping into, that you can share?
Not really. It was more just like getting to know each other, you know, building a relationship type thing.
Sure. He's a big fashion guy. You know that?
A big what?
Big fashion guy. He loves to bring interesting sweaters and wear interesting sweaters and such, yeah?
Oh, I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah.
I'm more of a basic guy. I'm dressed.
That's because you've got the hair. That's the only accessory you need.
You don't need a sweater, Kobe. You don't need a sweater. Before we let you go, so obviously you're getting ready for the summer league, you're heading out, and you know, when you look at your game and you look how it translates to the NBA, the NBA right now is all about speed and pace and space. What will you need to improve upon and to make the transition successful from North Carolina to the Bulls?
My thing is decision-making at a point guard position. That could always get better for me. Instead of using my speed to just go one speed all the time, use my change of pace. So I've been working on that. I've already started working on it, and I'm going to continue to work on it. So
I'm not sure how this translates exactly, Kobe, but is there a point guard in the league now or one that you watched growing up that you feel like either you wanted to emulate the game or you just really appreciated the game they brought to the floor and thought you'd take, you know, something here or there from them?
I watched a lot of different point guards growing up.
Sure.
Chris Paul, Steve Nash, Russell Westbrook. Right now, my favorite player is Damian Lillard, so I watch him a lot. But I mean, when I go out there, I don't really try to model my game as somebody. I just kind of try to be me.
Sure, just appreciate other guys' games. Yeah, I got you.
Yeah,
it's worked so far. Congratulations, Kobe White. Welcome to Chicago, and thank you for joining us this morning on The Score.
Thanks for having me.
Good stuff. Kobe White, the first-round draft pick, Kelly, and he sounds like pretty humble kid,
yes.
pretty confident, though, and it's somebody who isn't going to be overwhelmed by the moment, and it won't be something that it phases him after coming from a program where he was thrust immediately into the spotlight.
He has a soul and a spirit, which I think is important.
He
does,
spirit.
Jim. He has a soul and a spirit.
And
he
apparently
also,
very teachable. We are coachable, right? That's what we kept hearing. Very coachable, very coachable.
It helps when you have a soul and a spirit if you have a jump shot, and he seems to have a jump shot too,
does.
Joe. And I think
some handles.
Good first impression from Kobe White.
Agreed. Yeah, I like that he had some fun with us.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station. Mike Florio, ProFootballTalk.com, NBC Sports, Twitter.com/ProFootballTalk.
He got game! We get better and better!
NFL Insider, Mike Florio.
Molly and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score. Kelly Krull in for Mike Mulligan today. And we are pleased to bring in Mike Florio, who joins us on the St. Charles Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram Hotline, home of the real deal. Good morning, Mike.
Hey, how are you today?
Doing pretty well. Doing pretty well for late June. And obviously, there's not a whole lot going on in NFL camps with everybody away for their mini breaks before training camp starts and kicks in next month. But there is a lot of discussion, Mike, over NFL replay. And that has been sparked by Rich Eisen writing a guest column for Peter King on his Football Morning in America, and he outlined some of the problems that are anticipated based on the explanation they got from Al Riveron about replay and the way that it could be contradictory with calls. What do you make of the discussion going on around the league about replay, and how bad could this get?
Well, this could get really bad. I mean, I think the league needed to do something to prevent another scenario like what we saw in the NFC Championship game, where there's a horrendous missed call and there's no mechanism for fixing it. And the NFL, after I think the competition committee went a couple of months of believing that it could get by with doing nothing and just accept it as a 50-year event and it's never going to happen again, at least not in our lifetime, so who cares? Let's just deal with the rules as they are. They overreacted at the behest of the coaches and the owners, and now we have a mechanism in place that is going to result in micromanagement of pass interference calls and non-calls with something far more than that clear and obvious. And those are supposed to be the key words, clear and obvious. The clear and obvious early hit by Nickell Robey-Coleman on Tommy Lee Lewis in the NFC Championship game. Now we are picking through frame by frame a possible instance of pass interference in Super Bowl 53. I don't think it's clear and obvious. Stephon Gilmore significantly hindered Brandon Cooks on a play that Al Riveron says would have been overturned for a finding of pass interference. There was a play from a Chargers-Chiefs game in the regular season
in week 15.
Where I don't think it's clear and obvious. The key is, what is clear and obvious, and how is the NFL going to make this work in real time and not excessively delay the game and also result in too many plays, too many rulings being overturned based upon replay review?
Mike, is there anything clear and obvious, though, about certain calls throughout a game? I mean, isn't this more the same? Nothing is as clear-cut as everybody wants it to be. Is this improvement, or is this taking a step back?
Well, here's the problem. Most of the purposes for replay review, most of the plays where it's available, it's based on something objective. Did a guy get 2 feet down? Did the ball come out before the knee hit the ground? We can all see that. There's no disputing it. Now we're taking something subjective. Is it clear and obvious that the defensive player significantly hindered the receiver? What does that mean? And what does it take to be clear and obvious? And you're going to have 17 different replay officials who have to make the decision in real time with a full speed replay, no frame by frame, whether to activate automatic review in those moments of the game where automatic review is available. And then you're going to have Al Riveron pour over it with a fine-tooth comb. You know, I hate to say it, it sounds harsh, but I think we've seen enough of a body of work from Al Riveron that we can fairly conclude that he has some struggles when the time comes to try to properly apply the replay rules. And I think over the next couple of months, somebody at the league office, preferably the commissioner, needs to make sure Al Riveron understands that this information he's putting out there is not the way it should be. It should only be in the most egregious, obvious cases where pass interference will be called by replay review if it wasn't called on the field and will be overturned if it was called on the field and it shouldn't have been. This should be there only for the kind of emergency action that we needed in the NFC Championship game and not as a way to open a new box of replay review function for all sorts of potential infractions where it's a lot closer than what it was in that Rams-Saints game.
Mike, you brought up the NFC Championship game. I just saw a little blip from something you had done earlier in the week. I thought it was cute, the Zion Williamson passing of the torch from Drew Brees. But what is the latest with Drew Brees and the Saints and that relationship moving forward?
Well, the Saints have said recently that Drew Brees is on a year-to-year arrangement, and I think that's smart. He turned 40. Not every guy is going to play at a high level past his 40th birthday. We're deluded into thinking that any of the quarterbacks who want to do it will automatically be able to do it because Tom Brady's figured out how to crack that code on Father Time. And I think we saw some indication last year, somewhere between week 6 and week 10, is when there's the thought that maybe Brees started to fall off a little bit physically. And I think it's a real concern for the team this year. If Brees, and back to the play in the Rams-Saints NFC Championship game, Nickell Robey-Coleman was on the wrong side of the field. He saw Tommy Lee Lewis uncovered on what would be the right sideline if you're facing it from the Saints' perspective. Well, Drew Brees, 3-4 years ago, would have seen Tommy Lee Lewis more quickly, would have gotten the ball more quickly, and he would have walked into the end zone before Nickell Robey-Coleman could have closed that gap. And those are just little indications that maybe Drew Brees isn't the guy that he used to be, and I think it's going to be a challenge this year for the Saints to have the kind of success we've seen the last 2 seasons.
Mike, tickets for NFL London games at Wembley Stadium go on sale within minutes, I think, at the top of the hour. For the Bears game at Tottenham Hotspur Stadium, they go on sale, I think, on Thursday. Where this is leading, obviously, will be a further look at interest in NFL football in London. Will there be as much interest as in past years? Do you think this will lead to a discussion that happens seemingly annually about whether or not an NFL team could survive in London?
I think that the league likes to dangle that carrot of the possibility of the team relocating to London. Every once in a while, somebody says something about, ooh, maybe a Super Bowl played in London. And I think this is all aimed at just capturing the imagination and retaining the imagination of the folks in London who like football and who are getting that, what, four games a year as it currently stands. I think the end result is that there would be 6 to 8 games every year in London. It wouldn't be a home team per se. It would be a rotating slate like what we're now seeing. I just think there are too many practical impediments to putting a team in London, from the travel time to the time away from home when you're setting up at your East Coast base for 2 or 3 weeks at a time, tax rates, exchange rates. Will the NFLPA agree to relocate one of the businesses to another country? Just too many issues, too many problems. I know the NFL likes the idea of maximizing that market and teasing them, but the possibility of a team moving there may help. But I think, you know, it's unless they bring back the Concorde, and even then, I don't think it would happen. But at a minimum, you're going to have that supersonic flight to get back and forth across the Atlantic Ocean. But again, I doubt that it would happen even if that would return.
You kind of make me think of the Rays and the thought in baseball this week of them trying to split a season with Montreal and part of their season down in Florida. It's funny. But, Mike, one more thing on the Bears. I think you did it with Chris Sims. The playoff game and the way it ended and Matt Nagy showing that clip often. What is your takeaway with using that as motivation but towing the line as also needing to move forward to next season?
Yeah, I mean, look, I understand and appreciate the reminder of that feeling the players have when they lost that game. I don't know how many times you need to be reminded of it to understand, yes, that's how it feels, and yes, we don't want to feel that way again. I think you can get desensitized to the feeling if you see it too much. Mm-hmm. And I'll make a point that Jeff Fisher made on NFL Network late last week. It puts even more pressure on whoever the kicker is going to be. I mean, can you imagine that first game of the season, Thursday night, NBC, whoever is the kicker, what they're going to have to deal with, what they're going to have to worry about. And I know that kickers are expected to thrive in those settings, but I can't think of another time where a kicker had more pressure on him going into a season than whoever the Bears kicker is going to be will have. And constantly watching the closing moments of that playoff game is not going to make it any less pressure. It's only going to make it more.
Mike, not a big week around the league, but a big week in Kansas City. The NFL plans to meet with Tyreek Hill tomorrow, according to reports, which would be, I think, it's an interesting move because obviously this was going to play out and the league was sort of, you weren't sure what direction this was going to go. What do you expect to happen and where is this all headed?
Well, I think the key for me was the report from 810 WHB that multiple interviews are planned. I've reviewed the personal conduct policy very carefully. I can see at least two situations, maybe a third, where he could be found in violation and could be suspended independently for the different actions. You can be suspended without violence. Jimmy Smith, the Ravens cornerback, was suspended 4 games last year for making threats and engaging in emotional abuse against the mother of his child. So I think Tyreek Hill, at a minimum, is going to be suspended for what he said to Crystal Espinal. It's his voice on the recording saying, you need to be terrified of me too. There are other grounds he could be suspended for if they find he engaged in excessive discipline of his son, if they find him responsible for the creation of an atmosphere that his son was actually removed from the home, that kind of hazard, that kind of danger existed, that Hill is responsible for that. If they come to that conclusion, that's another basis. And hovering over all of this is what he admitted to doing in December of 2014, choking and beating then-pregnant Crystal Espinal. He'd never been suspended by the NFL for that. It all happened before it got to the NFL. But that's out there, and that's going to make, I think, the NFL take a much dimmer view of him. And I'd be shocked if he's not suspended. In my mind, the only question is how many games he's going to miss.
Mike, before we let you go, did Aaron Rodgers find an unlikely ally in Brett Favre, who told the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel over the weekend that new coach Matt LaFleur needs to kind of give him some leeway at the line of scrimmage, and that's been the ongoing offseason conversation in Green Bay. But when Brett Favre weighs in, people notice.
Well, they notice, and that's right. It's advantage Aaron Rodgers. And look, Aaron Rodgers' contract is what gives him the ultimate advantage, because what are they going to do? If he decides he's not going to follow what he's told in the huddle, and this understanding they're going to call two plays, and there's a series of criteria he should look at to decide which play he should ultimately go with the line of scrimmage. If he goes off the board and he consistently does it, are they going to cut him? I mean, he holds all the power here. The fact that this is public, I know people around the league who think that this is Aaron Rodgers' way of sticking it to Mark Murphy for, just the way the team has been handled over the past several years, and Aaron Rodgers didn't get any input into the hiring of Matt LaFleur. He's got the power. He's making the money. And he's ultimately going to be able to do whatever he wants to do. He's the quarterback of the Green Bay Packers, a team that has no owner, a team where he is the most visible and most highly compensated member of the organization. And, they need to work this out in a way that makes it look like everyone's on the same page. The bottom line, though, is I think Aaron Rodgers can do whatever he wants to do.
Great stuff, Mike. Talk to you next week.
Thanks,
Mike. All right. Take care, everybody.
Mike Florio from ProFootballTalk.com. Kelly Kroll in for Mike Mulligan today. Mulligan and Haw, and you can join the scores. Lawrence Holmes today as he hosts Wilson Contreras, the man who was involved in a little controversy last night, and Albert Almora Jr. at the Budweiser Brickhouse Tavern in Wrigley for the first luncheon series of the 2019 Cubs on Deck series presented by TimberTech and Xfinity. Tickets are sold out, but make sure you're tuned in to listen to Lawrence's conversation with Wilson and Almora today at noon right here, 670 The Score, or on the Radio.com app. When we come back, Transition with Dan and Connor. Mullane Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.